Our final guest of the afternoon is Lieutenant Colonel in the Reserves, Maurice Hirsch from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs and the former Director of the Military Prosecution for Judea and Samaria. There is a lot to get through. So as always, Maurice Hirsch, thank you so much for being with me on Chai FM.
Always a pleasure to join you, Simon.
So I guess we have to start with Iran, because that is the number one issue in the news today. The Times of Israel reporting that Trump is saying Iran is taking too long to negotiate a deal. Now they'll have to pay a price. I don't know if anyone believes anything he says anymore. Where are we?
So I think we're trying to get to a deal. That's what President Trump wants. The question is whether the Iranians are capable of even meeting the minimum demands of Trump. And the answer is very, very clearly no. This has been a non-starter from the beginning. The Iranians are not willing to give up on their enriched uranium, which is a non-negotiable demand of Trump. They are not willing to discuss even their ballistic program, which is a non-negotiable demand of President Trump. And so what we've seen over the last 2 months of this, of the ostensible ceasefire, is almost a foxtrot backwards and forwards, not really progressing anywhere, and in the knowledge that it probably won't progress to anywhere at any time in the near future. And eventually, President Trump is going to run out of patience and say we have to continue this process with other means. What those other means exactly are remains to be seen.
If I was watching this unfold from an Iranian perspective, I'd be sitting back smiling from ear to ear. I would thinking the man has made it very, very clear he's not prepared to pursue this war. He's got his own domestic issues at home. He wants nothing to do with this. We've won. We can be as obstinate as we like. All those red lines you spoke about being Trump red lines just seem to have disappeared out of the window. I'm talking about enriched uranium. I'm talking about ballistic missiles. I'm talking about all the issues that were major issues for Israel.
Well, I think that the Iranians are not really smiling so much. They have taken, as much as they tried to project bravado, they took a massive beating during the war, both from Israel and from the U.S. forces, obviously. The financial ramifications of the war and of the stranglehold on Iran since the war have been really quite substantial. The Iranian economy is entirely destroyed. We're coming up to the summer. In the summer, Iran has traditionally suffered from a severe drought and lack of water. That situation is only going to be exacerbated this year. They have no water. They have limited food and imports coming in. When they import 90% of their goods, they are incapable of selling any of their oil. Their oil production has almost ground to a halt, to the point where in the very near future, they will be causing irreparable damage to their wells. The Iranians know that they are in dire straits, and they are actually trying to bank on the fact that President Trump is in a hurry, and the bad news for the Iranians is I don't believe that he is. He's not in any hurry whatsoever. He needs to pass the time peacefully, quietly, until the midterm elections, and then after the midterm elections, I believe that whatever the outcome be, the Iranians are in for a tremendous surprise. But until then, we'll see the World Cup going by quietly. We'll see the preparations for their military operations, and we'll see this continued discussion of a potential deal that can be reached in a day, in a week, in months, that will never materialize, and then will eventually lead to, I think, a renewal of hostilities probably towards the end of the year.
Let's move on to something else. This story jumping out at me. It's the motivation behind why they're doing what they're doing that fascinates me. And this is the headline. Knesset advances quasi-constitutional bill, effectively equating Torah study with IDF service. And I just don't understand, other than coalition politics, why Netanyahu would want to upset his own base to that extent.
So I think that what Prime Minister Netanyahu is trying to do is trying to throw a bone to the Haredi parties, to ensure the ultra-Orthodox parties, to ensure that they do not join a potentially other government after the elections coming up. He's incapable of passing a full law that would give them an exemption from military service. He knows that that would be a complete disaster. So he's trying to do a piecemeal move to signal to the ultra-Orthodox that he is still committed to promoting that exemption from military service, but not at the moment, maybe at some time in the future. That's what he's trying to do. I think he is entirely wrong in his approach, unfortunately. I think the ultra-Orthodox will take whatever he gives and then will betray him eventually, and will go with whoever is willing to give them their exemption from the draft after the next elections, and that will also be the left. They will basically sell their mother's souls in order to get Netanyahu out of power. And they will promise the ultra-Orthodox anything, and the ultra-Orthodox know that and understand that. We even saw Yair Golan, the ex-deputy chief of staff, quietly off the record saying, whatever the ultra-Orthodox want, we will give them, when he's ostensibly the most vocal ultra-Orthodox draft person. It's all a political lie that they're playing. At the moment, unfortunately, it's all election campaigning, and each side is, I think, trying to win over the hearts of the ultra-Orthodox, who control anywhere between 15 to 20 seats. That's a big proportion of the Knesset, and so that is a winning bloc, whichever side can get it on their on their side. So that's, I think, what's going on.
So am I being completely emotional, unrealistic, when I start to have thoughts that maybe if you are going to be a representative of Israel in the Knesset, you had to have done army duty, or is that an undemocratic, unacceptable principle?
Well, I would love to be able to say that that is a clear requirement, but it isn't. Because it excludes many women who don't serve in the army. It would exclude potentially disabled people who, for medical reasons, didn't serve in the army. It would exclude all of most of the Arab representatives in the Knesset, and so on. It would exclude many of the ultra-Orthodox. So there would be, unfortunately, too many people excluded from that type of a criteria, which is why, in many circumstances, it's not a criteria which is adopted. And that type of positive discrimination needs to be to give more rights and more abilities and more financial support to those who do serve, and not necessarily try and level the playing field with people who haven't and won't ever serve, for whatever reason it may be.
Came across another story today that I just sort of glanced at, talking about, I think, child grants to the Haredi community, which had been stopped if the father hadn't pitched for military service. And they're now looking to change the wording of that law, not taking the father into account, but the mother only, which it just seems such game playing to me, Maurice. I mean, surely the Israeli public isn't that stupid.
Unfortunately, it is just a disastrous situation where, for many years, in order to win the vote of the ultra-Orthodox electorate and their representatives, the governments and really successive governments from both sides and all sides have thrown excessive and ridiculous amounts of money at the ultra-Orthodox populations. They've been given rights which no other groups of people have received, and for no good reason. And now trying to take those rights away is proving to be very, very difficult. And so they're trying every way to maneuver and manipulate the law and the language of the law in order to create that false reality and false recognition of the fact that they are not contributing to the economy, not contributing and not serving in the army, really being a weight around the neck of the country, at least financially. That's something which which successive governments just haven't managed to
It's
deal
going
with,
to have to
unfortunately.
change. Going to have to change. You mentioned Netanyahu and politics. There was another throwaway line by Donald Trump, either in the last 24 hours, talking about the fact that Netanyahu may quit politics. This isn't the first time I've heard that said. Do you think there's any truth to that?
No, I don't think that Prime Minister Netanyahu is going to leave politics before the next elections. I believe that he will run. I believe that he will probably even potentially win the majority or head the largest
Block.
party.
Wow.
And not necessarily bloc, but at least I believe the Likud will probably take either the most or at very worst, the second most amount of votes. And so he will continue on with his political career. I don't think he will remain in opposition as the leader of the opposition. That's something I think that he would avoid. But once he wins such a large majority, as I believe he will do in the next election, it will be hard, almost impossible, to exclude the Likud as a party in the government, because it would require the all of the others to join together with the ultra-Orthodox and the Arab anti-Zionist, anti-Israel, Hamas-affiliated parties, even as Naftali did, Bennett did with Ram, and that will be something which obviously will be a tremendously destabilizing effect for Israel. It will get rid of Netanyahu. Well, yes, correct. But it will put us back in a situation where the government, as the government of Naftali Bennett did, reopens Gaza and allows tens of thousands of Gazan terrorists to come into Israel and collect intelligence information ready for the October 7 massacre. This is a disastrous picture if it actually happens. I believe that Netanyahu understands that he's not invincible. He's 78 years old. Running a country is not simple, and his age is obviously a factor. And at some stage, he will probably want to retire. Maybe there will be some type of a move in a few years that he will replace Bozhi Herzog as president of Israel, as was done with Shimon Peres. All of these are potential outcomes, but we'll have to wait and see what actually happens.
It is such a shame that we are out of time. I so badly wanted to talk to you about Erdogan and his very bellicose comments against Israel, but we'll have to pick that up maybe tomorrow, as well as a UN report talking about Hamas executing and maiming dozens of Palestinians. And the last issue that I wanted to discuss with you that I wasn't going to get to today was this Graham Plattner, the Democratic nominee, the guy with a Nazi tattoo who's won a primary in the States. All very concerning issues, but we don't have enough time. Lieutenant Colonel Maurice Hirsch, as always, thank you so much for being with me. We need double the time, but thanks for what you gave us today. Appreciate it.